escape division, but good luck.
Good luck in terms of what?
It's heavily congested.
Oh, yeah.
And there, again, people who would make those diversions would be looking to go further east than, I would guess, 39th or 52nd. And I would argue that nobody would look for an alternative in either Hawthorne or Powell. There might be some other way that I'm not aware of, but I've tried them all, and there's no good way to get east, particularly when you're going west of 52nd on Hawthorne or Powell.
The bike is a good alternative.
What was that?
The bike is the good alternative.
Why I'm very familiar with the Clinton Woodward route.
Yes, yeah, which is a great route.
So
yeah.
The contemplation, the plan for turns, no turns, has been based on future modeling. And then if you could clarify,
yes,
for Commissioner Saltzman.
Lewis Wardrop. What we looked at, where we have the constrained capacity, like at signals, we looked at parking removal to allow people to actually, when somebody's waiting to make a left, that people could go around them to go through. And so we did that at the, like, 26, where we have a signal.
Where you have signals.
Yeah. Yeah. To address that issue about left turns.
Yeah, I was thinking more of the streets where you don't have signals too. But so you're saying your modeling shows, even a full build out, the intersections where there are no signals, the number of left turns is not significant enough that it would,
correct,
impede or violate whatever traffic standards that exist.
In 2030 is the model that we used. Yes, and that's true. It did show that it would still operate adequately.
The discussion with this panel. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. How many people are signed up?
We have 8 people signed up. The first 3, please come on up, are Amy Levin, Liz Gaddy, and Doug Klotz.
Good morning. Welcome to the City Council Chambers. We're glad you're here. You just have to give us your first and last name and tell us if you are if you're representing a group or an organization or a business. So please begin.
I'm Liz Gaddy, and I was a member of the Community Advisory Council, or committee. Should we?
Oh. Go ahead.
As a member of the Citizen Advisory Council for the Division Streetscape and Repaving Project, I learned a lot about how the community interacts with and utilizes Division Street and its offshoots. It's a vital place. Our intention on the committee was and is to ensure that it remains vital for all who live, work, shop, and travel through our wonderful neighborhood. Through lots of research, a series of meetings, open houses, and other conversations, and creative problem solving, our team consisting of city staff, consultants, and community members worked to recommend modifications that would impact our corridor favorably. We spent many hours both in committee and via email questioning and consulting and considering the best options. It was a lot of time and energy and lots of really good conversation. The modifications that we came up with include those that Liz already went over in her slideshow earlier. For me as a mom, the committee member representing schools, PTAs, and parents, and someone who regularly walks the neighborhood, I was most concerned with safe street crossings and community way stations or stopping points, as well as flow throughout the corridor. Flow includes drive-through traffic such as cars, bikes, TriMet, as well as school buses, and those stopping to park and contribute to our local community. The improvements we recommend in principle meet my desires. I am very interested in the ongoing committee efforts to prioritize those improvements based on cost and impact. I also ask that the city continue to prioritize the possibility of making a significant impact in its 7 corners, and I know that a significant amount of city staff time and money was put towards coming up with a creative solution both before this project started and during the project. But I also feel strongly that we can make an impact there in the future. And I think that the community will coalesce. That's it. Thank you so much. I need to leave because I promised my children I'd only be in chambers for a little while.
And they look incredibly bored. So I.
Well, and actually, they would love to get your autographs, and I don't know how we could do that.
Sure, they can come on up and just we'll give them. They can walk behind here.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Klotz, welcome back.
I think Amy is next.
Amy.
All right. Hi.
Hi.
Good morning. My name is Amy Lewin, L-E-W-I-N, and I live in the middle of
this span of division, if you will, off of 28th and Division, just feet away. Got interested in the Division Street process when my daughter was 6 months old and walked the route with other neighbors then. And for the past year, I've sat on the Citizen Advisory Committee as a neighborhood board member and representative there. I support this drawing, and it's nice to see something on paper and a plan. So I appreciate everyone's effort on that. It's been a long year and a lot of conversations. Still want to put my impact statement on parking. It looks like we're losing parking, but in some places we're gaining a clear message on the street on where you can park. And I think pro-time lanes sometimes cause confusion for drivers and for people who do want to park but aren't sure, can I park here? Is it safe? Traffic will be flowing through. And this is an issue that has long been debated over the last couple of years, but I think the removal of pro-time lanes and addition of 24/7 parking in those spots is going to be an improvement that on this skinny street will be notable. It will affect traffic, in my opinion, but I'm willing to stand in traffic with my car and wait. And just as someone who uses the street in all modes, that's a frank neighborly way of saying that. Also, Seven Corners is an important part of our street. It's an important part of the Hosford-Abernathy neighborhood. I've been working with creating a park or a pocket park plaza at Southeast 19th Avenue and Division. And though it's not reflected in this plan and is a neighborhood process that we're still trying to coalesce around, as Liz would say, I think it's important to note that there's not a lot of spaces for improving public space in this corridor, and we need to take advantage of every inch that we have. So just want to, again, thank everyone for their efforts, and thank you.
So is that the plaza, the vacant lot that used to be a service station or something?
It's actually, the vacant lot is owned by the county, and Reach Community Development is planning a multi-use, multi-family development that other people can talk about. The space I'm talking about is owned by the city. It was a quitclaim deed in 1902 for a dollar. And it's now a dead-end street, 200 feet by 60 feet, that is used right now as an informal parking lot with unpaved access on the backside. So this is something we can talk about in future conversations, but it's a space that I think the city could really take advantage of.
Who in the city owns it?
Portland Bureau of Transportation.
Right there?
Yeah.
I'll sell it to you for $2.
You're on record.
Thanks for your work.
Thank you. Appreciate
it.
Hi.
Mr. Klotz.
Hi. Doug Klotz. I was on the Citizen Advisory Committee, and I am here to talk about pedestrian issues, as I often do. The Division Streetscape Plan does a lot of things right for pedestrians. It removes two lanes on Division on most blocks. And it adds curb extensions at 23 intersections. Hopefully there's enough funding for all those. Unfortunately, there is an area where I believe the plan gets it wrong, and that is the addition of stormwater management facilities, which I'll call swales, in commercial zones. And I don't know if you have my hand out here.
Yes.
Okay. You're probably familiar with the three zones in the sidewalk, furnishing zone, pedestrian through zone, and the frontage zone. And on Division, that all comes out of 12 feet, the pedestrian through zone being 6 feet, the furnishing zone is 4. The 6-foot through zone, while it's adequate, you know, in residential areas, you get in a commercial area and you have more than just two people walking, and another person comes the other direction or another couple, you have to go around in one of the other zones often. So it's the rest of those areas are used for walking also. And I know cafe tables are sometimes in those zones, but you generally can get around. Concerning to me and others is that the proposed swales that still are in the plan in commercial zones would remove that entire 4-foot furnishing zone. And there's a picture here showing the area at 35th Place. This would narrow the area for walkers and shoppers, remove parking, because it also extends into the street, and reduce space for community gathering and interaction that happens on the sidewalk. And this really doesn't contribute to building a vibrant business area. Now, the staff has looked at where there are current sidewalk cafe tables, but they have said that we will look at where there are current permits, but if there isn't a sidewalk cafe permit now, then we can put the swale there, which to me is addressing the current use, not the use it's zoned for. So here's one example. On the second page, we have the ivy-covered building at 37th. So we need some ivy removal there. But they say the owners of this building wanted to open up their windows and have a nice sidewalk cafe. Well, there's swales planned for both streets there. And taking away the whole four-foot furnishing zone, they wouldn't be able to have any tables in most of that area. Now, I understand why BES wants to use swales or stormwater facilities throughout the city, and it's a smart move. It's a cheaper alternative. Just, you know, treats the water better. And also, I do understand why the BES would like to put them on division. And I've heard this. I'm not just speculating. I have heard this from some staff that putting swales on major streets is good publicity. It, you know, puts them out there. People can see them, and people say, well, I want some of those for my street. So it is good publicity, but I'm not sure that it's good policy. I think that if you look at the area between Hawthorne and Powell and Division, I mean, and 12th and Chavez, there's 50 miles of neighborhood streets there, 50 miles of streets. And there's 1 mile.
So your time is up.
Yeah.
But what is your understanding of the percentage of the plan area of the percentage of the sidewalk frontage within the plan area that would be swales? Or ask staff that.
Yeah, I am only concerned about the commercial zone. I mean, to me, it's fine in a residential.
So to clarify, so I mentioned from staff how much of the commercial zone would have percentage would have swales in it. And so you're saying your concern is, or you, I just want to make sure I sort of get the extent of your concern. Would you say that no swales in on the commercial zone?
Well, as few as possible. There are some that are part of Tabor to the River, and those have more priority. The rest of them are desirable, but not specifically tied to Tabor to the River, not specifically tied to a need for the swales. And I also would note, as I didn't get to my last paragraph where I added that staff has really addressed these issues quite a bit. And they've moved a lot of swales around the corner, and that's something that I, understated early on.
Right.
Okay, can we put them around on the side streets rather than on Division? And they have moved quite a bit of them.
But you still have concerns.
Well, I still have concerns. And it was specifically in the area 30th to 38th, which
right.
is sort of the commercial node, and there's like three corners there where they're blocked up on both sides. And I just hope you would urge council, urge the staff to really concentrate on those last few to just get them around on the side street if at all possible.
Well, I know that you look at these things very deeply and you consider these kinds of issues very thoughtfully, so I appreciate the testimony. Your thoughts?
I have a comment on that. We did respond to a lot of Doug and David Allis's concerns. David Allis, another citizen advisory committee member, has proposed a design where we could place a grate on some of the stormwater facilities, especially with respect to the commercial zone. So we're going to look into that further in the design.
I have a drawing of that.
Innovation in swales.
Yeah.
So we're going to look at that further in the design. And some of the things where you're saying turn them around the corner, there are actually business loading zones currently in those areas. We wouldn't want to place those.
There's always a lot of things to manage. Commissioner?
So, yeah, Doug, in your last sentence, you say that staff has promised to maintain 8 feet of paved sidewalk behind the swale in those commercially zoned areas.
Or to try. They said they try to do it.
Try to maintain 8 feet.
And that, it mostly that comes in areas where there's currently 10-foot paved out of the 12-foot pedestrian zone, so there's like 2 feet toward the rear. And when you then take that 10 feet, put the 4-foot swale in it, then you're down to 6. So the idea is to pave that last 2 feet to get back to at least 8. So that's whether that's what.
And you're okay with if they can do that?
Well, it's a compromise. I mean, it'd be better to have more, but that's the least it can do in areas where, where that stormwater swale has to go in the Division Street right away.
I was in China a couple years ago, and in Shanghai they have a number of street side swales that have decorative grates over them in commercial areas. So I know it's done in some places. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The next three are Chris Eikamp, Linda Nettikoven, and Holly Kreneck.
Good morning. Thank you for waiting. Thank you for having us. Well, good morning, Mayor. Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Chris Eikamp. I am a resident of Hossford Abernathy, and I've been involved in this process in the various citizen advisory commissions that have gone on for close to a decade. I'd like to start by asking you to approve the Division Street Plan. It's the culmination of almost a decade of citizen work in collaboration with PBOT staff and an excellent design team. It's not a perfect plan, but it will mark a great improvement for many parts of Division Street. I'd like to talk about what I see, though, as a missed opportunity on this project in the hopes that you'll help set the stage for improving the process used on future projects, on both on Division and elsewhere. Over the past 15 years, I've seen Division transform from a dying industrial strip into a lively neighborhood commercial district. Division now serves as the core of the sort of 20-minute neighborhoods envisioned by the Climate Action Plan, boasting a grocery store, a bakery, and a number of excellent restaurants and cafes surrounded by the surrounding the geographic heart of our neighborhood, which is Seven Corners. As the nature of the activity along Division has changed, the street itself has remained the same, so this project is long overdue. Unfortunately, while we were able to convince PBOT to remove the commute lanes along most of the stretch between 12th and 28th, they will be replaced by a permanent four-lane profile through Seven Corners. So the core of our 20-minute neighborhood will remain divided by one of the only remaining stretches of the old Division, and this is a huge missed opportunity. Wouldn't it be better to spend some time and effort to try and reduce demand for driving at the peak hour? If we could convince a relatively small number of drivers to either switch to another mode or to drive at a different time, we could build a project that supported our 20-minute neighborhood instead of dividing it. And where else in Portland would it be as easy to convince people to drive less than in our neighborhood? Ironically, PBOT's Smart Trips program, which has a proven record of reducing auto trips, will be focusing on Division Street after the project is built. But instead of waiting for the project to complete it, why not work on altering driver behavior while the project's still being designed and then lock those gains in by building for a reduced number of drivers? 15 years ago, when I started out as a transportation planner, the concept of linking transportation and land use was still gaining traction. Now there's universal recognition that the two are inextricably linked. Likewise, I think in another 15 years, we'll come to see that road design and demand reduction are equally linked, and all major road projects will include a demand reduction component. Overall, this project will have a very positive impact on Division Street, and it deserves your support. But in some ways, it's also a huge missed opportunity. By integrating demand reduction into this project and combined with a bit of political willpower, I'm absolutely convinced we could have taken a good project and made an excellent one, a project that would have benefited the neighborhood and helped us down the road laid out in the Climate Action Plan. Instead, we've retreated from that vision. I hope that you will encourage PBOT to take a more global view on their next big project and ask them to build smarter, not just bigger. Ask them to include demand reduction strategies in every project they bring before you. It's time to move beyond talk. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Linda. Commissioners, my name is Linda Nedekoven, and I am also one of the 10-year veterans on Division Street. I serve as a member of the Steering Committee for the Citizen Advisory Committee and also Vice Chair of Hossford Abernathy Neighborhood Association. As others have said, we're here. This is the latest chapter in our ongoing quest to make Division greener and more economically vibrant and more attractive, safer, not necessarily in order of importance. I think many of us would also add the notion of keeping our neighborhoods and business districts affordable as we go forward with these improvements, and I think that's an ongoing issue that the city, I know you struggle with, and we want to mention it again. I think that the CAC, the various PBOT and BES staff members, and our really dedicated team of consultants have put in an amazing effort, and we really want you to support this plan. It really represents months of collaboration and compromise. I want to stress the things that our PBOT staff can't report to you about the involvement process, and that is that people on this committee feel really passionately about these issues, and yet people were able to come together again and again, struggle over, you know, finding the best answers, the best compromises, and still regard each other with great civility and cordiality. And I think that's the kind of public involvement that we want to see more of in Portland. One of the dilemmas that this street faces occurred to me as I listened to an update on the bicycle master plan recently at a Southeast Uplift meeting, where people talked about the fact that when we're successful with our bike boulevards, then we move traffic off of those and onto other streets. And so all of our streetcar neighborhoods, we've got very good bike patterns already in place, But when we're successful in moving those cars off those streets, then our commercial corridors become the main throughway for the cars, the auto traffic, and the buses. And they're also trying to be our main streets, where we're trying to get across the street back and forth easily from one business to another. And so we're, you know, it's like tree canopy and solar access. It's one of those delicate balancing acts, and I'm not sure we've totally gotten to the very best mix yet on Division. I would really emphasize and support the comments that Chris made, and that'll save some time in my testimony. We're really committed, I think, to try to take some collective action to reduce demand on our own going forward, in the hope that we still can do some more work in Seven Corners in the future. PBOT is, you know, clear that they don't have the resources to help us with demand management right now, although they're very committed to doing the measuring for us, and we do appreciate that in terms of traffic volumes and modal splits. So I guess it's that question of how we're going to ever get to our climate change goals if we can't even, you know, take these kind of risks on Division Street. And I know that the numbers don't look good in terms of the auto traffic volumes, but somehow we've got to change that. So thank you. And thank you for taking this so seriously and asking such good questions this morning.
I just want to follow up. What do you mean by the numbers don't look so good on traffic?
You know, the things that you alluded to in terms of the amount of auto traffic the street is asked to carry and projected to carry perhaps as it becomes more dense. But again, the idea is that we're going to have a street that's, again, more multimodal. And so hopefully there would be fewer cars. And that's the thing we struggle with. PBOT tells us that the enemy is us, that we are the folks driving up and down Division Street on our errands that are adding to the traffic volumes. And, of course, I watch the people parking their cars in my neighborhood to hop on the bus. We could get them to park further up the street, perhaps, or come earlier in the day. We could cut down a few cars in that respect. But I know we've got a lot of pulling and tugging happening. But it seems that we need to – this street is such a – great example of so many of the struggles we're having in terms of balancing things in our city. And there's a lot of goodwill and a lot of good energy here to try to do something that's innovative.
And because of the number of local trips, sorry to take a quick compassion break. Because of the number of local trips, this is, we're going to have some, I think the additive to this will be our discussions in the Portland plan about the 20-minute complete neighborhood. And why is it that so many people are driving as far as they are within the neighborhood to get basic services? And is there any way to make a footprint that's appropriate to the street? Are there ways to provide more local services and needs for the neighborhood? So it's going to be an interesting iterative couple of decades, but I think we can get it, and I think this helps move us forward.
Hello, I'm Holly Krennick. I'm a member of the CAC. I live and play along the Division Corridor. When I first moved to Portland and after much city touring, this is the neighborhood I chose as my home. Some years later, I left, only to return eventually as a homeowner. During my home search, I was certain the inner southeast was where I wanted to live. I offer this personal history because I think it exemplifies the importance of the recommendations that are submitted before you. There are very good reasons people choose to live in the Division neighborhood. They are making conscious decisions to move to this area for the same reasons people move to Alberta, Hawthorne, Belmont, and Mississippi. It is important to preserve and foster the appealing qualities of this area. Division Street is a vibrant, diverse, multidimensional section of Portland, and I love it. In part, this is what makes it such an exciting, desirable neighborhood to live in, but this diversity is also a natural result of the diverse populations and perspectives that live along Division. I think it's fair to say that the CAC began as a group of individuals with wide-ranging views on the purpose and character of Division. Using the existing Division Green Street and Main Street plan, we were able to build some cornerstones of common beliefs. These beliefs included the importance of Division as both a place to live and a place to work, an emphasis on pedestrian safety and walkability, and a focus on art and sustainability. A year later, here we are. The theoretical commonalities we identified at the beginning of the process have transformed into a practical application for redesigning the street in order to achieve the community's needs. Hard work, balance, compromise, and lots of discussion were put into this report, and I feel the final result is consistent with the original vision. While there may be some concern regarding the impact of the pro-time lane removal, I believe the CAC has appropriately identified those concerns and made a responsible effort to mitigate them through its diversion statement that's included in the report. Overall, I am impressed with the community-driven process symbolized by the CAC, and I am supportive of the report and recommendations submitted. Specifically, I believe the recommendations do their best to achieve a more pedestrian-friendly, economically vibrant, and environmentally sustainable Division Street. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all very much.
The last two who signed up are Alan Field and Rex Fisher.
Does anyone else wish to testify that did not sign up? All right. Thanks for waiting. Welcome to the City Council.
Mayor Adams, Commissioners, my name is Rex Fisher, Citizens Advisory Committee member. For the past 25 years, I've lived at 1549 Southeast Hickory Street, one block from the proposed project. With a background in civil engineering, I've spent the majority of my career in transportation, including 28 years at TriMet, where I work alongside service planners and schedulers and serve on the Sustainability Committee. However, I must state that the views I express are my own and not necessarily those of TriMet. And while I appreciate the professionalism and integrity of the Bureau of Transportation employees that have worked on this project, it is my belief that the removal of the peak hour travel lanes on Division Street is a mistake that will lead to increased congestion on Division Street and subsequent diversions into the neighborhood. I realize that PBOT has developed computer simulations that do not show diversions into the neighborhood, but in my experience, simulations can be misleading. For example, it's my understanding that the city used a computer simulation program called AutoTurn to design the new Northeast 14th Avenue connector between Burnside and Sandy Boulevard. Unfortunately, the turns as constructed are too tight for buses to negotiate, and to this day, buses do not use the roadway that was designed for them. A recent letter to the editor of the Oregonian referred to this as an engineering mistake. As I say, simulations can be misleading. Furthermore, I believe that the current traffic levels citywide are artificially depressed due to the recession, and that once the economy improves and people return to work, the traffic will return to pre-recession levels and then some. I don't feel that PBOT's projections adequately reflect this. So I fully expect that over time, congestion will increase on Division. I feel that this increased congestion will endanger pedestrians as traffic backs up and motorists run red lights in frustration. I feel that congestion will adversely affect the Clinton Street bikeway as motorists divert to it and crowd out the bikes that are rightfully there. I believe that congestion and loss of travel lanes will adversely affect bus operations through the corridor as well, delaying the journey for thousands of commuters on TriMet's most heavily used bus line and increasing the likelihood of accidents. I believe that any congestion will make it more difficult for emergency vehicles, increasing response times for both fire and ambulance services. Commissioner Leonard, I'm sure you can relate to that issue. As far as I can tell, there is no consensus on this issue. Based on my conversations with my neighbors, I feel that a significant number of hand neighbors, do not support the removal of the lanes. In fact, fully a third of the participants at one meeting stated their preference for keeping the additional travel lane. I believe that the motivation and thinking behind this project are stuck in a 2005 mindset, ignoring the rapid pace of development that has already been taking place along Division Street. Unfortunately, if this plan is constructed as currently designed, there will be no opportunity to undo the damage. In other words, there is no plan B. While I support the project goals of increased pedestrian safety and improved air quality, I cannot support the removal of peak hour travel lanes that have served their purpose for decades. As one resident put it, can't we just share the road? Or, to borrow an old adage, if it's not broken, don't fix it. If anyone on council is interested, I can document my concerns in more detail and suggest a way forward. Thank you for your kind attention.
Thanks for your testimony. Appreciate it. Hi.
Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Alan Field. I'm on the Richmond Neighborhood Association, but I'm not speaking on their behalf. I'm speaking on behalf of the experience I have from having traveled on Division for about a dozen times or more a week for the past 18 years. As prior testimony, I am strongly opposed to taking out the pro-time lanes. From my experience, and I'm sure Commissioner Leonard can see from his daily experience, it will definitely add to constricted traffic, congestion, increased gas consumption, and more fumes. The stretch of road from 35th to Chavez every day from 4 to 6 p.m. has off and on backup, five blocks. That's going to happen. Other intersections, and there is a proton lane at Chavez. You're going to increase backup. This wouldn't be the first time engineers got it wrong. I mean, Kittleson previously got it wrong recently on a Lewis and Clark report, which I skimmed briefly in a Willamette Week Rogue of the Week. I don't know enough about studies, but I'm concerned. As Commissioner Leonard, he got it right on. If two-thirds of the traffic is local, they're not going to go over to Powell, which is backed up from Ross Island all the way up to 205. And people who commute from Portland to Gresham, Division is a faster commute east of 60th. So it's a major commuter street. So, and I don't understand the need for full-time parking on Division. That stretch, three blocks of it, is St. Philomena Church with a huge parking lot. And 90% of the residences have parking. Either those who live in Ladd's Addition have backyard parking in their alleys, or on the other side of the street, it's all, most people have side street parking. My biggest concern is congestion and also the impact it's going to have on the bike boulevard. Now, I currently do divert over to Clinton because when I'm backed up for a block and a half at Seven Corners, I know I will not make the light. So I cut over, and I see a lot of other people cutting over. That is going to happen. But I have a feeling this pro-time elimination is going to happen. What I stress for the council to really push on is I'm glad that PBOT is doing a mitigation program. What I would like to see is for them to spell out what could that be. Is 5% diversion acceptable, 10%, 20%, 30%? Spell it out. And perhaps one mitigation remedy, you know, let's consider it and pencil out the cost, is possibility of removing the pro-time lanes if traffic is diverted 5%, 10%, 20%, if accidents rise to a year or 3 years. Let's consider that. You know, there's no harm. And if they do get it wrong, you know, let's look at that option. So that's what I ask the council to do that. And I would invite questions on further aspects of this. There are some things I like about this. The greening of the street, they're going to fix Seven Corners. Taking out a few parking spots will really increase that intersection, which is great. Thank you.
Well, if the council chooses to move forward with this, I want to reassure you both, because of that, we will continue to monitor and respond accordingly. We, as those of us that work in transportation know, the modeling is usually pretty spot on, but not always. And so I think this area of town, more importantly than other areas of town, because of all the factors we've talked about, will require us to be very vigilant in looking at diversion and how it might be diverted, or hopefully over time and shorter period of time, we can convert more of those trips to walking, biking, or shorter car trips.
Thank you. If I could just add one thing, I think what will happen there is once that's full-time parking, you're going to have now a cadre of downtown office workers parking on Division and busing in.
But we'll have timed spots, no? Yeah, we'll have timed spots to make sure that doesn't happen. And so that's a good point.
Thank you.
Thank you both. All right. Does council wish to have staff come back up? All right. Carl?
I guess I need a little clarification on the diversion strategy or the diversion language. If you could.
Your question, Commissioner?
Somewhere in this plan is something called a diversion
statement.
Statement. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Could you just clarify what that is again?
Absolutely. And it's a statement that says, before we implement this project, we'll take before and after counts on Division, and then after construction's complete, continue to monitor both streets. And if we see that diversion has occurred as part of these improvements, mm-hmm. then we'll take steps to mitigate for that and do additional calming on Clinton Street.
Well, and when you say counts on Division, it was described to me, as you'll take counts on Division in a way that we can see if traffic is going off Division.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah,
and indeed. that we suspect that the first place it might go might be Clinton, but we'll be able to monitor whether it finds some other nook and cranny as well.
Correct.
So I guess implicit in that, I can assume that we'll look at things like increased traffic congestion, idling times, and things like that, and measure those as well? I would assume that's standard.
We're just looking at volumes at this point to see where the traffic goes, if it decreases on Division because people divert.
But I think Commissioner Saltzman's suggestion is very useful, is what's the backup now and what would be the backup?
We can monitor the queues before and after, yes.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I'm just, you know, concerned from an overall climate responsibility, but also air quality issues if we're, if this results in significant more idling time and traffic congestion.
Yeah. Okay.
We can include that.
Anything else? All right. Carla, would you please call the vote?
Saltzman.
Well, I think this is a great plan, and I'm pleased to support it. I think it shows it embodies a lot of aspirations and vision for the city in terms of how we want to calm traffic, but also provide green streets and more effective ways to handle our stormwater, rainwater, other than putting them into big pipes and putting them into treatment plants, which cost us money. And so I think this is a very ambitious plan. I want to thank the mayor and thank all the people who served on the committee. It's not without some trepidation that I have around impacts on traffic congestion that may result from this. And I think we need to, and diversion to Clinton and possibly to other streets as well. You know, there's probably no limit to the creativity of people that want to get around a bad intersection. So I think we need to sort of step back and look at this ultimately on a broader scale than just the Division Clinton corridor when we're evaluating how is this succeeding. But I like all the elements in it, and like I said, without some concern about increasing congestion and idling time. But I think this is a bold plan and one that I'm pleased to support. Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Congratulations, Mayor and citizens and staff. This is a wonderful project, and it's good to see everybody here in support with some good comments as well, particularly like Doug Kloss's comments and the urging to try to maintain 8-foot paved sidewalks in the commercial areas. And the suggestion about the on-street parking being timed, I think that's a valuable addition. So this is a report which we accept, and obviously things can change as you continue to work on the project. So this has been a good hearing. I want to thank Commissioner Saltzman for his support with the Bureau of Environmental Services of this project with $7 million of Environmental Services rate money to provide the swales and to narrow the street for the primary benefit of the neighborhood, the businesses, and pedestrians. So we've received a lot of flack for swales that are going to help pedestrians and bicyclists as well as drivers. This one, I think, may actually reduce congestion with the reduction of the pro-time lanes, similarly to on Tacoma Street, where we went from 4 lanes to 2. It actually works smoother because you don't have to merge. So we'll see. And this is a great project, and obviously a lot of work has gone into it. Thank you very much to the Citizen Advisory Committee. I know how much work that is, and you've done a splendid job. Aye.
Adams.
Well, I want to thank the citizens who continue to exemplify the best of Portland in terms of their active participation and engagement in helping us put together a plan for the better future of Division Street. This is a tough part of town from a transportation point of view. A lot of speed, a lot of volume, narrow street. This needs to be followed up with and is in perfect sequencing with the Portland plan in the sense of now figuring out how do we manifest a more complete 20-minute neighborhood in this part of town so that the need to drive so much that we decrease the legitimate need of folks right now to drive so much. I think this is a necessary step in that direction. In order for us to have this commercial Main Street provide services that people want, we have to make it a more inviting streetscape. We have to make it a place where you actually want to get out of your car to a greater degree than it is right now. And I think it's great right now, except for the speeding cars and the massive volume of traffic. So that's why we're focused on this. And so I really want to thank you and the entire team for just some fantastic work. And again, I think this is the best plan out there and continues to get better. And we'll continue to work on it as part of the Portland plan work. So please to vote aye. So approved. All right. That gets us to...
Thank you.
Can you please read the title for regular agenda, non-emergency ordinance, item number 956?
Authorize revenue bonds for transportation projects.
Mr. Johansson, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. I am Eric Johansson, City Debt Manager. This ordinance before you this morning authorizes up to $7.5 million of revenue bonds to fund the replacement of aging parking meter pay stations. The financing will be repaid from gas tax revenues and other legally available revenues of the Bureau of Transportation. The financing is expected to be in the form of a bank line of credit with a term of 5 years. PBOT will make annual payments of principal and interest with repayment of the line of credit in full by the end of the fifth year. And I'll be happy to take any questions.
Questions from council? All right. We'll move on. Thank you. Unless there's objection, this moves to a second reading next week. Can you please read the title for... Get my pages right here. Emergency ordinance, item number 957.
Ratify a letter of agreement with AFSCME Local 189 and Tamara Palmer authorizing the settlement of a grievance regarding working out of classification.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, Your Honor, Mr. Mayor and Commissioners, I apologize for the coughing that you've heard from the back of the room. That has been from me. I'm doing my best with lozenges and water to keep that under control. Mayor, Commissioners, my name is Steve Herron, Labor Relations Manager, and I'm appearing on behalf of BHR on this matter. There are five matters that I'll be appearing this morning on. Four of them were drafted and submitted by labor relation folks who are in bargaining this morning, so my knowledge of the particulars may be limited on some of these, and if so, we can come back to you. We can get folks out of bargaining and have them come and testify. In relation to this particular matter, this is an individual who worked at Water Bureau. There was some work assigned to her that over time it became apparent required a reclassification. There was, in fact, a reclassification undertaken. This is to compensate her for work done during the period of time between when the assignment began to happen and when the classification occurred. And it's in settlement of a grievance.
Questions from council? Why don't we read item number 958?
Ratify a letter of agreement with AFSCME Local 189, authorizing reimbursement of an additional pair of safety shoes for employees in the Water Meter Reader 1 and 2 classifications at the Water Bureau.
Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Steve Herron, Labor Relations Manager. This is a matter where the working conditions for the meter reader 1 and 2 classifications require that their footwear meet ANSI standards. Given the difficult terrain and conditions, the footwear does not typically last a full year, and the contract provision was intended to provide equipment that essentially covers a year's period. We are requesting an additional allotment for these particular folks for this particular equipment because the conditions are such that they go through the shoes more frequently.
Thank you. Carla, can you please read the title for item emergency ordinance, item number 960?
You want to do 959?
I'm sorry.
959.
Why don't you read the rest of them?
959, ratify a letter of agreement with laborers, Local 483, authorizing reimbursement of safety shoes and or rain gear for employees in the Automotive Equipment Operator 1 classification who are assigned to fuel operators at the Bureau of Maintenance. And 960, ratify a letter of agreement with Laborers Local 483, authorize rehiring of retirees in the Construction Equipment Operator classification in the Bureau of Maintenance. 961, ratify a letter of agreement with Portland Police Association authorizing the compensation of Doug Tang for certain overtime opportunities denied to him.
Now, why don't you just run through them
all? You betcha. Thank you, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Steve Herron, Labor Relations Manager for the City of Portland. As to the safety shoes, the AE01 safety shoes matter. Those are folks working with hazardous materials. Again, it's a situation where they go through them more frequently than was anticipated with the current contract language. As to the rehire of CEOs, this is actually a nice example of collaborative work between ourselves and 483. We appreciate their work with us on this. We have CEOs who are retiring. We have contract language concerning circumstances in which folks can be worked out of class for training purposes, and what we have is a difficult bridge between the retirement of our experienced CEOs and the training of new CEOs. And so this is a agreement to bring back retired CEOs for a finite purpose and a finite time in order to ensure that we get adequate training for the upcoming CEOs. As I think you're aware, the rehire retirees is a matter that the union is sensitive about, and we appreciate 43's work with us in developing this agreement. Lastly, concerning Mr. Tang, the Police Bureau, Mr. Tang's assignment is as a negotiation response team sergeant. That particular team is based out of a precinct. Our contract provides that officers be offered in order of seniority overtime opportunities within their reporting unit. Initially, the Bureau interpreted within reporting unit to mean precinct-assigned precinct-based folks and not precinct-based but other RU-assigned folks. We did, however, learn that there was a practice of allowing precinct-based other-assigned folks to do overtime in a situation such as this. And this was in a settlement of a grievance, and the amount that we are proposing to provide to Mr. Tang is indicative of a compromise on the amount of hours that he claims that he was not given the opportunity of overtime on.
That's it?
That is it.
Council discussion on any of these? Anyone in the room wish to testify in any of the matters before us? Carla, let's begin the voting then.
957.
Please.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 957 is approved. Can you please call the vote for 958?
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 958 is approved. Can you please call the vote for 959?
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 959 is approved. Can you please call the vote for item 960?
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Please call the vote.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye.
Thank you, Mayor Commissioner.
Thank you. Appreciate your work. That gets us to second reading, item number S962. Can you please read the title and call the vote?
Declare surplus property at 8 Water Bureau locations. Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
I appreciate Commissioner Leonard's clarification last week that the sale of these properties will be used to decrease the rates, and also Commissioner Fish's diligence in looking for opportunities to buy more parkland. Several citizens have contacted us with concerns about the process, and I would like to offer the Office of Neighborhood Involvement's assistance in the future on issues like this so that we could get the word out to neighborhoods as well as the bureaus to see if anybody wants to buy the properties. The important point, though, is that they have to be purchased. Rate money and rates cannot be used for general fund purposes, and we've had a lot of discussion about that over the past several months. And so the properties need to be purchased, rather they can't just be deeded over to parks. And so it was particularly helpful that Commissioner Leonard and Commissioner Fish were able to take one of the bigger properties off the list so that they could see if there's a way for parks to buy the property. But we don't have a lot of general fund money for purchasing additional property in parks, and so that's one of the constraints. There was a concern about the right-of-way near the Southwest Burger site, and this doesn't. This is only the lots. It doesn't affect the right-of-way, and street vacations and trails would be a separate issue that the council will get to deal with. So I appreciate the diligence of citizens in coming in to ask about these properties. We also need to be very careful that rates are used for the appropriate purposes and that when Water Bureau properties are sold, that they go to decrease the rates. So thanks to all on this. Aye.
Adams.
I want to thank Commissioner Leonard and his team for identifying and bringing forward these surplus properties in as assertive a manner as possible. It does benefit ratepayers, and in many cases it will also benefit those parts of town that have had these properties sitting there underutilized. So thank you for your work. Aye. So approved. Can you please read the title for non-emergency item number 963.
Clarify composition of police review board and applicability of code provisions.
Commissioner Leonard. Or is that the right person?
Yes.
Okay, Commissioner Leonard.
Based on last week's discussion, I'd like to move that we add an emergency clause.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that emergency clause. Carla, would you please... Any discussion? Carla, would you please call the vote on the emergency clause addition?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye.
Emergency. I'd like to, before the auditor speaks, like to give a brief overview of this issue, because I think it's being widely misunderstood. When Auditor Griffin Belaid and I began the process of drafting the ordinance the council passed here just a couple months back that really reconfigured how police oversight is conducted by the Independent Review, Office of Independent Review, I think it would be fair to say that the Police Bureau was less than fully on board with that process. And as a result, we did the best we could in drafting what we did and tried to get it right and tried to make sure it was as balanced as it could be without complete cooperation from the administration of the Police Bureau. After it passed, after the ordinance passed, well, let me first focus this in on what the issue is here. One of the aspects, actually a very important aspect of the change that occurred was pre-passing of the ordinance that the council adopted, the Police Bureau had two review boards. One was called the Force Review Board, and the other was simply referred to, Constantine, as?
A Performance Review Board.
Performance Review Board. So we had a Force Review Board and a Performance Review Board. In each of those boards, the police chief literally picked everybody that served on the board, including the citizen members. And it was made clear by the police chief to the auditor, the IPR director, and the Citizen Review Committee that the Independent Review Director, Mary Beth Baptista, may participate in some of those proceedings if the Police Bureau chose, and she may not participate if the Police Bureau chose that as well. As a result, we worked to get this piece as right and as balanced as possible. So the new ordinance eliminates the Force Review Board and the Performance Review Board and creates one board, which is known now as the Police Review Board. On that board, there are two sets of issues that they will deal with, and as a result, there are two sets of compositions on each of those two boards. When the Police Bureau has an issue that comes before the Police Review Board and it's a non-use of force issue, it will be comprised of a five-person board, three of which are Bureau personnel, two of which are non-Police Bureau personnel, one civilian appointed by the auditor, which is a change and approved by the council, and the second, the IPR director. So in the new ordinance, the IPR director is not just a guest to come in at the whim of the Bureau to observe, but rather a full participant on the review board, and in this case, on the non-use of force portion. The second types of issues that the Police Review Board will deal with are use of force boards. On those boards, there will be seven persons, four people from the Bureau, appointed by the Bureau, 3 non-Bureau members, 2 civilians, again, appointed by the auditor, approved by the council, and the IPR director, Mary Beth. Subsequent to the passage of that ordinance, the Police Bureau approached us in what I would characterize a much more collaborative fashion and said that of the 3 persons on the non-use of force portion of the board and of the 4 persons on the use of force board appointed by the Bureau, they wanted to trade out one slot. They wanted one person that we had from the Police Bureau to be replaced by the RU commander who is in charge of discipline. So in other words, the composition stays the same. The balance stays the same. The Police Bureau just decided, frankly, that they wanted somebody different than that person we decided, frankly, in a vacuum, should be appointed. Now, what I think has got lost here in this discussion in the last couple weeks is the bigger picture. And the bigger picture is we now have citizens appointed by the auditor, not the police chief, and approved by the council, and the IPR director is a sitting member of the Police Review Board, sitting voting member of the Police Review Board. They're not by the courtesies of the Police Bureau, but rather by the force of law. Frankly, if the Police Bureau wants to have whoever it wants on its side, I don't think it should be up to us or the public, frankly, or anybody to tell them who ought to represent them when they are conducting a process. Just as I didn't think it should be up to them to decide who represented the public as citizens and whether or not our duly elected auditor should be able to have her direct representative, the IPR director, sitting on the board. And I try to be fair in all cases and including this one. And I think it's beyond what I intended. It's beyond, I'm certain, what the auditor intended for us to micromanage the Police Bureau's involvement on these committees beyond the number that they are allowed to have. If they asked for an extra person, I think there would be a basis from the community, and I would, and myself included, I would not support adding an extra person. It is to me nothing more than an administrative function that they want to substitute one person with another. Because I will tell you from my experience, a uniformed member of the Bureau, whether it be the RU commander in charge that was responsible for the discipline or an assistant chief, is a distinction without a difference. It doesn't make any difference to me. What matters to me is this is a more transparent process with independent citizens appointed and the IPR director fully participating. Auditor Griffin-Vallade.
Thank you. LaVon Griffin-Vallade, city auditor, and here with me today is Constantine Sevier, who is the assistant director of IPR. And I didn't necessarily plan any more comments. I just wanted to introduce the changes to the exhibit, basically, that we submitted last week. As discussed during the June 16th, 2010 council deliberation of the ordinance clarifying the composition of the Police Review Board, additional amendments have been made to the exhibit, and hopefully you have before you a memo that lists all of those changes and the Exhibit A that it attaches to this ordinance to make an administrative change to allow us to formally establish that the board will begin September 1. That will allow us to time to recruit and bring before you approval of our recommendations for the citizen members of the Police Review Board. It will allow us to do some other sort of administrative things to prepare for that, and it will prevent having to operate 3 concurrent police review boards. So there's that piece, and then there's this change to allow the RU commander to be the one of the voting members of the Police Review Board. So the changes that I've highlighted, the first one is page 2 of Exhibit A, Section C, the composition of the board, number 1. It really just clarifies and corrects the wording that was there last time and makes sure that the RU manager or designee established as part of the quorum for the voting members of the board. So that's a fairly simple shift that aligns with our intent, and this just corrects that. It's unfortunate that we didn't have that correctly in there last week, but we do now. So the second one is on page 3, and it just adds some clarification about what we mean in terms of the definition of an RU a manager. It's a commander or captain who is the supervisor of the involved officer. So then the next one begins on page 3 and largely goes to page 4. It's section C.